Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Detroit and earned a bachelor's degree in education from the University of Michigan, a master's degree in educational administration from Wayne State University, and is currently working on her doctorate in curriculum and instruction at Wayne State. From 1995 through 2007, she was a middle school teacher in Detroit, and today is the deputy superintendent of Detroit Public Schools Community District. Her name, Alicia Merriweather, and we're honored to have her as a guest. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Alicia Merriweather, who for the last 7-8 months has been the deputy superintendent of DPS Community District. Alicia, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Sure. I love talking about my childhood and my mom and dad, so that's a great place to start. We're sitting here in the WJR studios looking out the window. I can almost see where I grew up, which was over in the Woodbridge neighborhood, which is near Wayne State University. I lived in that neighborhood until the time I moved to Southwest Detroit with my husband 21 years ago. And my parents were both teachers. My mom was a school librarian and my dad was a high school biology teacher. I have to believe that at some level, their love for education and learning impacted my desire to be a teacher. We grew up in the neighborhood near the Jeffries Projects, which at that time in the 70s and 80s was a pretty challenged neighborhood in terms of drugs and other nefarious activity. But my parents really wanted to make a difference in their neighborhood. And so we, as a family, really basically worked on houses in that neighborhood. Some of them were former drug houses and rehabbed them. My dad was a general contractor on the side. So in the evenings and during the summer, he worked on properties. And the objective there was, number one, to provide high quality, low cost housing. And number two was to provide an income to put myself and my two sisters through school. And both of those missions were accomplished.
Missions accomplished. In seventh grade, you go to Africa.
That's right.
And you live in Africa for a year. Tell us about that year.
Yeah. So in seventh grade, my family moved to Monrovia, Liberia, which is in West Africa. It's about the size of Kentucky with about 27 different languages and various dialects on top of that. We lived there. My dad was a teacher in a school there, and my mom did prenatal literacy workshops and projects with pregnant women. And we lived there for that school year. Our house was the last house next to what's called the bush or the jungle. And so we also lived very, very close to the ocean. So that's the only time in my life I've lived very close to ocean and a lush tropical area. We were also there during a time of political unrest. And so when I think about that experience, it really did change the way that I view the world and have a sensitivity and empathy for things that are happening around the world, particularly because when you are in a situation, you see it obviously up close and personal. What's communicated to the outer world sometimes is a little different story. And so I have a very vivid memory during the political unrest where many, many people were slaughtered. And the message that was sent back to the United States was political unrest in Monrovia. And there was so much more to the story that didn't make it back to the U.S. And from that point on, I really have been very sensitive to international issues and understanding that whatever it is that's communicated here in the United States may be true, but there's probably a whole lot more to the story. And I appreciate that experience for so many reasons. first of all, living in another country. But secondly, just understanding what we have as American citizens that is not true everywhere else around the world. So even things like choice at a grocery store. When we were living in Monrovia, the grocery store had many, many shelves, but not very many things on the shelves. And here in this country, you can go to any number of stores, and there's almost so many choices you get exhausted and kind of spin around and just leave back out without making a decision. And I think, too, just things that we take for granted, like for the most part, our electricity doesn't just go off. In Monrovia, the electricity would go out regularly, and it was unpredictable when it would come back on. And I think just living in another country helps you understand the world in a better way. I'm so, so thankful for that experience.
From 95 through 2007, you were a middle school teacher in Detroit. Tell us about that dozen years.
Oh, it was awesome. I really, you know, from the time I was a little kid, I wanted to be a teacher. And I've told this story often, so I don't mind telling it again. When I was a little kid, I would get my stuffed animals together and teach them. And sometimes I'd have my little sisters in there too. And I gave report cards and I gave homework. And I really loved teaching. I loved the idea of teaching, and that stayed with me. So even when I went to the University of Michigan, I knew I wanted to be a teacher. And specifically, I knew I wanted to come back to the city of Detroit to teach. And so when I came back, I found a spot in middle school science on the east side at a school named Farwell, which is now called Mason. And I was there for 12 years in room 128, the same room for 12 years. And I taught primarily seventh graders. And honestly, I always tell people this. It was the greatest choice I ever made. I absolutely love middle school kids. I love science. And so it was a perfect combination.
What did those students teach you in that 12 years?
Oh, well, middle school students, no matter where they are in this world, can teach adults quite a few things. I think one of the things that they taught me was the importance of a sense of humor. And the other things I think about are just the ability to be fluid, to be flexible. And the reason I say that is because as middle schoolers, and some of us adults don't remember, but when you were a middle school person, you were going through a lot of changes. You felt like you were an adult, but you were really still a kid. And there's all of these emotions and hormones and everything going on. And you're making impulsive decisions that sometimes have pretty serious consequences. But what I learned from working with middle school students is if you have a sense of humor and you are somewhat flexible, you can pretty much get through anything, because the middle school student will do and say things that 5 minutes later they will regret, they will apologize for, and as long as you can be flexible and forgiving, you can move forward from that spot. The reason I say a sense of humor, because middle school kids are just funny, and so if you don't have a sense of humor, they will destroy you. So you have to have a sense of humor and just enjoy them. They are really enjoyable people. And I just had a great time teaching science. We did all kinds of cool stuff. I mean, we built rockets. We went canoeing to learn about ecosystems. We made soap out of fat to learn about chemical changes. And just thinking about how to teach science in a more engaging way was part of what made all of that really fun for me, too.
We're talking to Alicia Merriweather. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula. We're with Alicia Merriweather. And in 2007, after 12 years as a DPS middle school teacher, you decide to go into school administration. Why?
Well, you know what? I resisted moving into administration for many years. I had been approached by the supervisor, by various administrators, trying to get me to leave the classroom. And I just refused because I loved teaching so much. But what happened was actually the middle school science supervisor, who was a mentor to me, passed away. And this opening happened because of her death. And I felt like if I were ever going to step into a space, it would be my honor and privilege to step in to move her mission and vision forward. And so I applied for the job and I got it. Now, the interesting thing about that was I got the job during the summer. And so I had finished my school year and gone home as a teacher, thinking I was going to come back to the classroom as a teacher. But instead, I received a promotion and I found out I would not be going back to the classroom. And so I actually spent many hours crying about that, I'll be honest. And even over that next year, there were times that I would get very emotional about not being able to teach anymore. And primarily because one of the biggest things that I did during that first year as a supervisor was work with unsatisfactory teachers. And so my primary job was to go into classrooms with ineffective teachers. And that broke my heart because I know what can happen in classrooms, and in especially in middle school classrooms in the city of Detroit. And to not see it happening, I felt was just an incredible injustice. And it made me angry and sad. And then I moved from those emotions to trying to help the situation. And so I spent a great deal of my time there in my first role as an administrator, coaching and leading teachers.
Alicia, in March of 2016... you're named interim superintendent of the Detroit Public Schools. Share with us what shape the district was in.
Well, that's such a great question. To paint the picture, right? So during that school year, which was the 15-16 school year, there had been the teacher work stoppages, also known as the sick outs. There had been a great deal of turmoil with our fourth emergency manager. So the district had been under state control basically for 16 out of the last 20 years, and we were on our fourth emergency manager. There was a great deal of tension, really, between the teaching ranks and the central office administration. Around that same time, when I stepped into that role, at about the same time, it was discovered that we had lead in our drinking water at some of our schools. 13 of our administrators were indicted. We almost ran out of money to make payroll. And then we almost ran out of money again before June 30th of that year. And all of that was happening while all of our collective bargaining agreements were expiring. So when I think about what was going on in March of 2016, there was just a lot of chaos. And I think the best way I can describe what it felt like to receive that appointment was just an incredible, incredible honor and privilege. Because for me, and most people don't know the backstory, but I was basically put forward as a candidate by the teachers. And so there was a lot of discussion with the new emergency manager coming in, who was Judge Stephen Rhodes, who handled the Detroit bankruptcy. As he came in, basically because of all the turmoil in the district demanded the leadership, the union leadership and others demanded a meeting with Judge Rhodes and the governor and other key leaders. And they said, please, we cannot take another leader from the outside. And please, we cannot take someone who knows nothing about education. And to Judge Rhodes' credit, I will always thank him for this. He listened. He listened to the people and he said, OK, I don't know anything about education and I hear what you're saying. So who? And he asked them who. And so apparently there was like an underground Facebook page, a closed Facebook page where people started circulating names. And ultimately, the way I found out about it is someone texted me a screenshot of basically a picture of me. Someone had grabbed a picture of me from the internet and created almost like a campaign poster. Said Meriwether for superintendent, hashtag trust. Meriwether for superintendent, hashtag hope. And I said, where are these coming from? And they said, this is what's circulating in the teacher world. And I said, no, you know, I just kind of dismissed it. And then I received several phone calls and follow-ups from the governor's office, and then ultimately meeting with Judge Rhodes, where he offered me the job. And when I went home and talked with my husband, he said, I don't know how you're going to do this because you're already working so hard. And I was. I was the executive director of curriculum, and I was working really long hours trying to move the district forward. And I said, you know, how I feel about it is I'm being given an opportunity to positively impact the district that I love.
From April of 16 to April of 17, as interim superintendent, you brought stability to the district, a calmness. How did you do it?
Well, you know, when I think about that, and many people comment on that. In fact, the president of the union has said this often. She said it was like chaos was happening in the district, and the moment you were announced as interim superintendent, peace, calm. How did that happen? I think, first of all, because the judge listened and actually appointed someone who had an education background. And I've been with the district for 20 years, and I am well known among the teachers and administrators as someone who works really hard and loves kids more than anything and loves the city. And so I think people understood the decision, number one. And then number two, I immediately started working on some very specific things that I knew were issues. And so one of those was communication. And so I crafted my first communication to staff, which was basically a message that turned into my Monday's message that I created and went out every Monday to staff. I wrote them myself, and it was my way of explaining what was happening in the district, what they needed to know, and in some positive messaging. But my very, very first message was talking about how we were coming out of winter into spring. It was about that time, coming out of winter into spring, and how the district itself was coming out of a cold, harsh winter into spring. And what that entailed was doing some spring cleaning. What it entailed was letting the light fall into the district and figure out what needs to be removed and a fresh start. And that message resonated because people knew there were many wrongs that had happened. There was a lot of hurt in the district. And I acknowledged that. And then I said, but we need to move forward. And my messaging pretty much every Monday, as well as Facebook Live, I just tried to be everywhere and encourage people that what they're doing matters. And so what I would say is that's probably one of the biggest things that I worked on that communicated peace and calm and a direction. I communicated.
We're talking to Alicia Meriwether. If you want to learn more, www.detroitk12.org. And I'm Jack Russell, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Alicia Meriwether. Alicia, anybody that has the honor to meet you or even listen to you tonight says, wow, this is a special lady. Everybody loved you. You had Mitch Albom, everybody wanting you to be the permanent superintendent. A committee's formed. They interview people. They don't even interview you. They hire Nikolai, and you decide to stay. You could go anywhere. Why did you stay?
That's such a great question. I stayed because, number one, I love this city and I love this district. But further than that, more than that, I made it really clear that whoever was going to be selected as the permanent superintendent needed to be someone with turnaround experience, someone who has an educational background, someone who loves children, and someone that I could learn from. And I have found Dr. Vitti to be all of those things. And I had the privilege of being able to work with him during the time that my contract was still in place as interim superintendent. So I had about 6 weeks before my contract expired and I had to make a decision. And that was a blessing because I was able to work with him, observe him, have conversations with him, and make a well-informed decision about whether or not I could and would stay on with Detroit Public Schools Community District. And during that time, I found him to be someone who cares deeply about children, who cares deeply about this city, and has an incredible background knowledge around turnaround. He came from Duval County, where the district was 120,000 students. Detroit Public Schools Community District currently just announced a couple weeks ago, we've exceeded the 50,000 student mark. So he was actually downsizing to come here.
For the first time in 15 years?
For the first time in 15 years, we have an enrollment increase in the district, which is it's remarkable. I mean, we have a local school board. We have a permanent superintendent. We have an enrollment increase. We have a strategic plan with priorities that I think people are going to be able to get behind and really communicate a message that Detroit Public Schools Community District is moving in the right direction. And we most certainly welcome anyone who wants to help us get there. But we'll also be very clear that if you're not here to help, then we don't need your assistance. If your help is not helping us move in the right direction, we don't need that kind of help. And so I am delighted to be able to continue to work for the district and the city I love. And I really have enjoyed learning and working with Dr. Vitti.
In the Indian community, the Chinese community, the Jewish community, education is a bedrock. It's a given. It's part of the culture. How do we get that mindset and expectation throughout America?
It's really a great question. I think one of the things that we struggle with in the United States is valuing educators, first of all. Okay, so let's start with that. If you want to have a high quality education system, the quality of the educator matters. And to attract the best and brightest, there has to be a level of respect that comes in the narrative around teaching as a profession, but also respect around salary and how we pay people that we say we respect. The people who take care of the future, we say the children are our future, the people who we entrust our most valuable asset to, we don't pay them accordingly. And, you know, you talk about natural resources, and you talk about your greatest assets. The greatest assets that this country has are our children. And until this country chooses to invest in education, and I do mean education for all children, until we choose to invest, we will not see education move. We will not see the priority placed on education. It just won't happen. And so there's questions about funding. So right now, the way the funding structure is set up in the state of Michigan, every single student in public education gets the exact same amount. That's called equality. What I really think people need to think about is this concept of equity. And that means giving students what they need, not giving all students the same. And so there's two components that I think to answer your question. How do we put a value on education? Well, number one, we need to figure out how to make education attractive to really bright, brilliant people who love kids. And then we also need to figure out how to support our children by giving them exactly what they need and their families what they need to make sure that all children are successful.
Okay. Speaking about great teachers and how important they are. Currently, the DPS Community District has about 2,500 teachers. Tell us about those 2,500 teachers.
Oh, my goodness. They're the backbone of this district. We have teachers who have been working just this year is their first year. We have teachers who have been with us for over 30 years. We have teachers who have done other things other careers before becoming teachers. We have teachers who knew from the time they were a young person, like I did, that they wanted to be a teacher. I think the teachers in Detroit are, they have to be some of the hardest working teachers in the world. And they have shown their dedication to the children of the city, both through their sacrifice. I mean, the teachers in DPS and now DPSCD took pay cuts. They loaned money to the district. They went without pay raises until this December. This December will be the first time in many, many years that our teachers get an actual full and complete raise. And for teachers to have stayed dedicated to this city and our children and continue to provide high quality experiences for our kids is just remarkable. And I would just like to say thank you. If any of them are listening, and if anyone who's listening is related to our teachers, please give them a hug for me, because the way that they have worked and continue to work to serve our kids is just unbelievable.
Speaking of working hard, Alicia Merriweather, for you, this isn't a job. This is a calling. This is a ministry. This, you put your heart and soul into this. Why?
You know, you hit the nail on the head. It is a calling. It's something I believe, like I said, from the time I was a little girl, I had a passion to do this work. Now, I, as a little child, I don't think I understood what that meant, or that I would be a supervisor or an interim superintendent or deputy superintendent. I knew I wanted to impact children in a positive way. And what they say, there's a saying that says, you know, when you love your work, it's not work. And I can honestly say that is true. I do feel that from the time I was a little girl, that this desire was put in me. I think every experience I've had in my life has prepared me for what I'm doing now. And the experience I had before, the things before that prepared me for that. I see it's like a mosaic of sorts, that these different tiles get put into place. And sometimes when it's being created, you don't see the full picture. But when it's done, you sit back and you say, wow, all of those pieces fit exactly right to make this picture. And I feel that my work in Detroit has been, I mean, it's been a blessing. I don't realize until I talk to other people who are miserable in their jobs, I don't realize how rare it is to literally love going to work. I loved being a teacher. I loved being a supervisor, a director, everything I've done, I've truly enjoyed. But I absolutely believe that it was work that was ordained for me to do.
We're talking to Alicia Merriweather. To learn more, www.detroitk12.org. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything is Possible, and we're talking to Alicia Merriweather, the Deputy Superintendent of DPS Community District. Alicia, a lot of people listening tonight, a lot of suburbians, say, okay, I was proven wrong. Downtown is definitely coming back. Midtown. But let's be real. The neighborhoods are awful. DPS, there's no hope for it. And they ain't ever going to come back. What do you say?
You know, I love having conversations with people who say things like that, because I really want the opportunity to highlight the things that are happening. I do think there are great stereotypes. And then I think there's also, when you watch the news and the media, there are so many negative stories. The news is showing that something happened, something negative happened. It's true. Those things did happen. But what about all of the great things that are happening? And I have this rule that every meeting that I run, whether it's a small meeting or a big meeting, we start with good news. Always. Always start with good news. And what I always say is there's enough bad news to keep us busy all day, but we need to be reminded of the good news, because there's enough of that to keep us busy all day, too. And I think many, many times the reason people have the perceptions that you just outlined is because they have not had a personal positive experience in a Detroit neighborhood or in a Detroit school or with Detroit kids or Detroit teachers or DPSCD employees. And as someone who's lived in Detroit my whole life, and specifically living in a neighborhood that really was troubled in the 70s and 80s and now is a completely solid, restored neighborhood, what I say to people all the time is there's hope for everything. And really, when you look at a neighborhood or you look at a school, what it takes is someone with an incredible vision, people who are gathering around a united cause, and making sure that people know that not only adults but kids are doing great things, and then making sure that they have opportunities. And so a lot of times we talk about the achievement gap specific to education. I like to push back on that a bit and say it's more of an opportunity gap. And if we close the opportunity gap, we will close the achievement gap. And so when I talk to people who have these ideas about what's happening in Detroit schools, one of the things I first invite them to is to visit, to come contact me. Anyone who's listening out there who says, you know, I've thought these things for many years, but I'm being challenged tonight by listening to what you're saying, I invite you to reach out to me. I'm on DetroitK12.org website, Alicia Merriweather. Contact me. I will meet with you. I will go with you to one of our schools and show you some of the awesome things that are happening. And then we can have a conversation about how you can be involved in closing the opportunity gap. But I think the neighborhoods, block by block, person by person, household by household, are coming back. And part of that starts in the schools, right? We're investing in the next generation that will become adults who are homeowners and business owners and workers in this city. And so I enjoy those conversations and invite anyone listening to reach out to me.
America's greatest natural resource are our young people. Bar none. Paint for us, speaking of vision, paint for us a picture of DPS Community District in 2020, please.
I think in 2020, you're going to see a shift in, obviously, what's happening in the whole city, but it's specifically with DPSCD. I think at that point, we just finalized our strategic plan with our priorities and core values. And I believe by 2020, those core values and priorities will be very evident in every school across our program. So instead of the district functioning almost as an amoeba-type organism, it's functioning as a highly organized multicellular structure that's all put together in a way that makes sense. And for my science people out there, you get the analogy that a multicellular organization that has specialized cells that do specific things is very, very different than an amoeba. And I do feel like in some ways where we're starting is a very disorganized system with very hardworking, well-intentioned people, with kids who can learn and want to learn, with families who want the best for their kids. So we have all these components. We just need to get highly organized, highly focused, prioritize the right things, start spending money on the priorities in a very organized way, stop spending money on things that are not making an impact. And so at 2020, I think you're going to see evidence that those things are in play, that the district is singularly focused on the priorities, that the money, the budget is lined up with those priorities, that partnerships are lined up with those priorities. And guess what? When everything is lined up, partnerships, funding, people is all lined up on the priorities, you're going to see those priorities move. So, of course, achievement is one of those things that will move. Culture, talent, those are our priorities, the whole child, and responsible stewardship. Those are our priorities. And I think people will be happy to see those priorities moving forward.
One of the things very close to your heart is STEAM, science, technology, engineering, arts, and math.
I love STEAM. I absolutely, as a former science teacher, and I think, you know, the word STEAM now has gotten a lot of steam, but I think before it was popular, good teachers have been doing this for a long time. And that's just basically cross-curricular connections that help students to learn. And so science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics are connected. They've always been connected. But doing things in a very intentional way to highlight those areas for students, I think, is critical. And so through partnerships with Belle Isle, with the Science Center, with Cranbrook, various other partners, the Henry Ford, we're working on all kinds of different partnerships that I think in the end will really benefit our kids. But we do know one of the reasons why this has become a critical focus is there's still a shortage of workers in those areas coming from the United States. And I want them to be coming from Detroit, Michigan. So we are going to continue to focus on those STEAM areas and make sure that our students have as many experiences as possible to prepare them for those jobs.
Alicia Merriweather, as our time winds down this night, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
Well, first, for young people out there listening, the first thing that I always like to say to a group of people when I have the privilege of talking to young people is thank you for listening. First of all, thank you for listening to what I'm about to say. And then the second thing I say is please know that even if you don't feel it, there are many, many people working on your behalf and people who you may never see or meet who want your world to be better than it is and are working really, really hard to make sure that you have opportunities and access. And sometimes as a young person, it doesn't feel like that. It feels like no one is listening. It feels like no one cares. And I just always want to tell young people that people care about you. And that there are people like myself and teachers and administrators in Detroit Public Schools Community District who work their whole lives, every day of the work week and then even on the weekends, to try to make sure that you have what you need and more. They go the extra mile because they care about you. And so if there's ever a time that you're thinking in your quiet times where you're alone and you're thinking nobody cares about me, I want to say to you there are many, many people who care about you and are working very hard.
If Mike Duggan's listening tonight, Dan Gilbert, Chris Illich, Tom Lawand of Shinola, and they want to put up a big billboard, Detroit, the city of hope, all they have to do is add a picture of Alicia Merriweather. That's hope. Thanks a million.
Well, thank you very much.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Mazzulla. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spawn.